Give yourself some love with our self-care programs at hrnradio.com.
Welcome to the Mindful Beauty Show. I'm Dr. Debbie Palmer, your host. I'm here with Dr. Bernie Siegel to discuss his book, Three Men, Six Lives. Dr. Siegel is a New York Times best-selling author, lecturer, founder of Exceptional Cancer Patients, and a retired pediatric general surgeon. He's been called a leading teacher of the mind-body connection and is well known for his groundbreaking book, Love, Medicine, and Miracles. Three Men, Six Lives is Bernie's 19th book. You can find out more about him at BernieSiegelMD.com. It is so nice to have you here today. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you. I mean, why I've written all these books, because I have to go back with a bit of humor, what really happened. I'm more of a visual person, an artist. I've painted portraits and have been into that as a child. But in college, I took a course in creative writing just to include more things into my life. And it's the only C I got in 4 years of college was in creative writing. My sense of humor also. I can't get Colgate University to raise my grade, so I'll get high honors. They took it seriously when I wrote them a letter saying, I have a book on the bestseller list, so if you raise my grade, I'll have, you know, high honors. And they sent me this serious letter about not being able to alter grades after graduation. But I was sorry that they didn't laugh at my request. But it's what I found also is it's like William Saroyan, the author, said to somebody, you're a good writer. And he said, I haven't written anything. He said, the letter on your desk to your father. He said, well, that's just a letter to my father. Then write a letter to everyone. And I think that's what I've been doing since the experience of Love, Medicine, and Miracles. It's like writing in a journal, writing my experience, what I've lived. And The Three Men, Six Lives is written as a novel, because I didn't want to expose people. I mean, I admit in the book that one of them is me. There's a physician, and his past life experience is mine. So, in a sense, I am him, but I'm not writing about myself and my wife and, you know, our family. I'm writing about someone else to make other points and to teach things. So, these things, when they happen to me, I feel we have to share them and say that they're not imagination, they're not crazy. And what I mean by that is things like past lives, things like near-death experience, messages from the dead brought to me by mystics. These are things that I have experienced. When I was 4 years old, I almost choked to death on a toy. When I was on the telephone telling a woman how busy I was and I didn't have time to talk to her, she said, why are you living this life? And I went into a trance and saw myself in a past life. So I know these things are real, even body memories. I went back as a 50-year-old to being an infant when for the first time my shaved head was massaged by a woman. And it took me back to my childhood and what my grandmother had done for me. Pushing things back where they belonged was my mother's term. But she had put oil on my head and, as my mother said, pushed everything back where it belonged due to birth trauma. And so I went back to being that infant. And when I opened my eyes, the room was filled with people. And I said, I'm getting a massage. What's going on here? And the husband and a massage therapist also, who was massaging my wife, of the woman doing me, said, we thought you had a heart attack or a stroke. We couldn't communicate with you. And I said, yeah, I went back to being an infant. And because I knew what happened. I could feel it, who I was and what I had become. So to me, the whole aspect of consciousness, that bodies die, okay, let's put it that way, but our consciousness does not. So it goes back to the source and gets recycled. Mm-hmm. And I can remember as a kid and a young man when, because when I had my near-death experiences a lot of years ago, when it wasn't a popular thing that people wrote books about, you know, it was the thing that you must be crazy if you're saying that. But I would always say the boy on the bed. And one day it occurred to me, why don't you say, I watched myself? Why do you keep saying the boy on the bed? And it really struck me that even as a kid, I realized that's not me. I'm not the body. I left the body. See, I'm thinking, seeing, aware, and I don't need that body. That was something I was given so that we can perform and do things. Yeah, if you're just consciousness, you can't fix something physically. I mean, you need a body. You need the tools. But we all need to know ourselves better. And by looking into all these things, I think we become our own therapists. You know, why do I do this? Why do I do that? Why do I like this? Why do I feel fear if I see this? And let me just explain it, and then I'll take a breath. So if you want to ask me something, go ahead, because once I get started, it just sort of flows out of me. But I remember watching TV one night, and they were introducing this 9-year-old who was going to play a violin with a concert orchestra. And while they were introducing her, they asked her, you know, how did you get into this? Why? Because it was amazing. And I never forget her saying, when I was 5 years old, I saw a violin for the first time, and I had to run over and hug it and hold it. And I thought what she's telling us is that there's a violinist in her from a past life. And that's why she has this incredible talent and had that, you know, urge to go grab that violin. And I think those things are in all of us. So, you know, why, as I say, you may like a certain type of work or have a certain type of talent. Because I never took lessons in how to paint the portrait. I just knew. I just looked. Got a brush and paint and did it. So our house is filled. All the walls are covered with things that I did. And I also found what a great relief it was to create. Because that's one other thing I would recommend to people. Do what makes you lose track of time. See, my sense is that it's almost like a near-death experience. When you have lost track of time, your body doesn't know what time it is. So it doesn't get older. It doesn't age. It's again, it's like you've left your body because you've lost track of time and that kind of reality. And I think it's the healthiest thing you can do is what makes you lose track of time, because it's creative almost always, and it gives you and your body this healing message and healing feeling. And then the chemistry of your body changes, and it's more healing and anti-aging versus Monday morning when everybody's bitter and resentful and doesn't like what's going on and my job and the traffic. And, yeah, we have more deaths of a variety of reasons on Monday morning than we do, say, Friday afternoon when you're saying, oh, I'm going home now for a couple of days.
Yeah, I so agree. You know, one of the biggest blessings is being able to do what you enjoy. You know, whatever you're creating, you're practicing. That is the biggest blessing. I agree, because you're happier.
Let me put it in the words of somebody in one of my support groups. Because she was somebody who was supposed to die of AIDS many years ago when, you know, like the coronavirus, and there was nothing to treat it with. And she said she put a note on her refrigerator that said, when you live in your heart, magic happens.
Mm-hmm.
And she became HIV negative, letting her heart make up her mind. and not thinking but feeling. And I'd say that to everybody. When you have a choice, say, how does it feel to do that? And don't let it be imposed on you. You know, in today, it's hard to not talk without thinking of Trump. I mean, I'm sure who he became was what his parents told them they wanted him to be. And he's still living that. And why he's upset with not being president again. Because what is the parents going to say now when he goes home and says, I'm not president anymore. They didn't elect me. They'll say, oh, how can we be proud of you if you don't get elected? But if he was doing it to give love to the world, he probably would have been reelected. But more importantly, how he would feel. He'd say, thank you, you know, I've done what I can. Not what I'm missing out on, but what I was able to do. He was a president. And why not feel good about that versus losing the next election? But that's his image of himself. Yeah,
living in your heart, that's so important. And it ties back in, exactly what you said. Mm-hmm. You know, you touched on the reincarnation. I wanted to ask, why is the understanding of reincarnation of our past lives helpful to us in this life?
Well, I don't use that word reincarnation because I want people to understand. I'm not saying Bernie Siegel came back. I'm saying the experience of Bernie Siegel returned.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the consciousness.
Right.
I don't know. What was your question again, just so?
With the consciousness that returns from past lives, why is it helpful to us in this life?
All right.
Like, you know,
so
when
you
had your experience and went
better.
Back.
You know, why do I feel a certain way about a certain profession, about a certain person, about a certain activity? And the wife I married in this life was in my past life. And I might as well share the detail. I mean, her face, when we first met many years ago as counselors in a camp, really had a powerful effect on me. And in my past life, I had killed her with a sword. I was a knight. And see, this is where I learned so much about myself. Why has faith always been an issue? Because I went to get therapy after I had my past life experience. There was so much grief involved. I cried for hours.
Mm.
Imagine killing with a sword the woman who's your wife at this time.
Mm-hmm.
And James Hillman, the Jungian therapist, as soon as I started saying, my Lord told me he wanted me to kill the neighbor's daughter because of what he was doing with our land. I said, well, why don't I kill him? Why his daughter? No, I want you to kill her daughter, his daughter. I said, what if I don't? Then I'll kill you. So I went. But Hillman said to me, Bernie, did you hear what you said, my Lord? I said, yes, the Lord of the castle. He said, no, Bernie, it's your Lord. And that was a wallop to me. In a therapeutic sense, because I always questioned the faith of people like Abraham, Jesus, and others. How could they say yes to dying on a cross, to taking your child off and sacrificing your child? But again, they had faith in their Lord, so they went forward and did it. Now, Abraham comes back with his child because he passed the test, so to speak. He didn't have to sacrifice his child. He was given another creature to sacrifice. But I always thought that if Jesus could perform miracles, then why don't you just jump off the cross and impress everybody, you know, with a sermon instead of dying in order to do what God intended and make a difference in the future life of our planet. And again, it's knowing what is right for you and what you have faith in. Because if you have the wrong Lord, look what goes on in the world. I mean, all the wars, minority groups, color of the skin, religions. We're all fighting, killing. But what if we all stopped and said, you know, we all come from the same place. We all go back to the same place. Why are we so involved in all these differences? You know, if we were all the same, we wouldn't be able to recognize each other. So we are made differently for identification, not for persecution. And, you know, that's one of my things. One of my paintings are two infants, a black child and a white child, sitting together naked on the floor. And I brought this to my chiropractor's office to hang it in his office. I've been hanging paintings up now, not, you know, just my thing, to, for people to look at them. But for me, the title of the painting is "We're All the Same Color Inside."
That's true.
And what you begin to realize as a painter is skins are beautiful. And I can tell you, in many ways, white skin is not as interesting as skin that has a color in it and other colors that come forward. So I'm often in elevators. I went through a stage staring at people, you know, to try to sense the skin and colors that were in people. And you get on an elevator, and I'd be staring at somebody. And I knew after a minute, they're a nervous wreck. You know, what's this neurotic man doing? And I would say, I'm sorry. It's, your skin is beautiful. I'm an artist. That's why I was looking. So then they at least weren't afraid of me, but they still thought I was a little bit nuts, you know, to do these things. But I saw the effect it had on me. And so I know we're all affected by what we experience, and that it's within us. And the more we know about what's within us through dreams and drawings, I mean, to let these things come forth, which won't come forth with just a matter of words and thinking, you know, the intellect, but it's getting into consciousness. As the Bible says, God speaks in dreams and images. So you want to know, what is that collective consciousness saying to me?
Mm-hmm. And it allows, you know, it allows us to know a little bit more about ourselves. So just like you said, with going to that past life, you were able to learn a little bit more, to become more intimate with yourself. And just like you said, like what your needs are, or why you like one thing, or what drew you towards your wife even.
Yeah, what songs do you like? What poems? What books? What connections does that have for you? And I think it's important that people ask themselves, why am I attracted to this? And again, it's not blaming anybody. It's to know yourself better. That's the part that's important. And once you begin to understand that, then, and know yourself better, then you live a better life. Because, you know, with the, I mentioned that story about a child and a violin. Now that's a positive past life. But what if something horrible happened? That's in the book too. What if your family was murdered in a past life? What would you do in this life so it doesn't happen again, or that you protect yourself? And those can be criminal things as well, you know, that if everybody's afraid of you and you're the one killing others, you know, versus the one loving others and helping others to heal. So the more you know about why you're choosing and why you're acting in a certain way, and I really think that's a vital part of everybody's life, because, again, that when, he who seeks to save his life will lose it, but he who is willing to lose his life will save it. Now, what do I mean? To get back to parents, you know, what we want you to be, see? Well, one man who, again, when he had a life-threatening illness, he was a lawyer. He closed the office, and it's interesting, I keep telling stories about violins, but he wanted to be a violinist when he was a kid, and his parents said, no, we're not going to be proud of telling people our son plays the violin. We want you to be a lawyer. He became a lawyer. Get a life-threatening illness, close your office, and get a job in an orchestra playing the violin. And a few years later, he's still alive playing the violin. See? So don't give up your life to what others impose on you. Save your authentic life. And then amazing things happen because your body now gets a message that you're enjoying every day and living your life.
Yeah, it's a very important message. You know, we're going to take a commercial break, and when we return, we're going to be discussing more with Dr. Siegel. We'll be right back.
The Bright Side of Talk, HealthyLife.net.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to The Mindful Beauty Show, and I'm Dr. Debbie Palmer, your host. I'm here with Dr. Bernie Siegel discussing his book, Three Men, Six Lives. So we were just discussing consciousness and, you know, how that helps in our current life. And you brought up so many great points about living in your heart and, you know, really following what's important. In order to have a fulfilled life, you have to really follow your desires. That's so important, not what others wish for you, but what you feel, you know, what you feel is important.
Well, the title of your show says a lot, Mindful Beauty Show. What your mind is full of can either be a horror or a beauty. And I think when you grow up, this is why I've learned from taking care of patients and knowing who did well, if you know what I mean, outliving what everybody expected and having cancers disappear and so forth. And in the book, Cancer Ward by Solzhenitsyn, he uses the term self-induced healing. And that's what people need to realize. And his symbol in his book is a rainbow-colored butterfly. Now, the rainbow is your life in order. The butterfly is a symbol of transformation. So over and over again, people transform their lives, and their body got the benefit of it. Because literally, see, when you study actors, this is done by a college student, he drew blood on a man and a woman who were acting parts for him. And in one was a tragedy and a murder involved, and the other was a comedy. And he drew their blood while they're acting. And you saw the immune function go down in the murder and up in the comedy, and stress hormone levels up in the murder and down in the comedy. So what you're thinking is what's going on inside of you. And why I think parenting is such a vitally important role, because if you have parents who are putting you down, giving you negative messages, not what I call mottos to live by, but mottos to die by. And I hear this from people. So all I can say to people is you can reparent yourself, or what I became for a lot of people was a chosen dad. That was a term somebody used who was suicidal and was sitting in my office, and one day she said, "You're my CD." I said, "What are you talking about? You're my chosen dad." And this Father's Day, from someone who was suicidal 31 years ago and is alive today because I told her, "I love you, I'll be your father," I became her BD. That's a bonus dad. She's always sending me cards. And I'll tell you, I keep them in front of me. I'm looking at them now while I'm talking to you, because I can feel that love, and it helps me get through the day. Mm-hmm. When somebody calls and says, "I want help to commit suicide. She was looking for Jack Kevorkian's phone number." And I said, "I love you. You're a child of God." And that turned her around. And that's the greatest gift for me, you know, to know that you've done that for even one person's life. So I think we can all reparent each other. And as I had to explain to our children, who wondered why I yelled a lot, five of them, and I said, it's not that, Yeah, because one of them said, are you getting a divorce? You yell a lot. I said, why are you asking that? He said, our neighbors are getting divorced, and they yelled a lot. I said, I yell when I don't like what's going on to get your attention. And I said, I love you, and I love your mother. I'm not getting a divorce. Oh, and my crazy sense of humor. I said, well, Mom and I will never get a divorce because neither one of us wants the children. And when I would say that, they would immediately realize, uh-oh, we better behave. He's reached that crazy point. But you see, they learned to talk to me, too. So they all became my educators. See, their term, when I was acting in a way that made them uncomfortable, they'd say, Dad, you're not in the operating room now. See, they let me know I wasn't in charge of everything. See?
Mm-hmm.
And so when they would say that, I'd stop, listen, and we'd work it out. And so we all had ways of communicating with each other in the house and making clear to them that like and love are two separate things. Oh, and for any women listening, my wife was good at taking care of me because one day I was really angry in the kitchen with what's going on. I mean, you have to understand, we had five kids, a house full of animals, and I mean it. You can read my book, Love Animals and Miracles. Our house was a zoo. We were rescuing everything all the time. That was me. You know, I killed with a sword in another life, and that included animals, too, who were in the way. I understood myself, why our home violated all kinds of zoning regulations in our yard with fenced-in creatures. But one day when I'm angry with all this going on in the house, my wife said, you're so handsome when you're angry. And I always tell other women, if your husband gets angry, just say, you're so handsome when you're angry. It doesn't solve the problem. But there's no husband I know who doesn't stop and smile and start communicating on another level once they hear how handsome they are.
It's the tension getting.
Yeah. So we keep learning from our experience and open-mindedness. And as I say, because our parents hypnotize us, I mean, this is known, what your brain is like as a child and what they tell you. I mean, if you hear from the time you're, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 years old, you're a mess. You're so stupid. You believe it the rest of your life. But if you're hearing positive messages, and I always share these three because I heard them from my parents. You come home from school and say, I had a horrible day. What does my mother say? God is redirecting you. Something good will come of this. And I thought, oh, my mother's no help. You know? But I learned from more well-known people, especially Norman Vincent Peale. He said to me, oh, my mother said, Norman, if God slams one door further down the corridor, another will be open. So you see what an attitude you have because it keeps your mind open. And I was often surprised when good things happened because something else led me in that direction that wasn't so good. The other is, what was it? Yeah. That if you win the lottery, what's the point of it? And my father grew up in tragic circumstances because his father had tuberculosis and died with no funds or insurance and leaving 6 kids and a wife. But my father said, what's the benefit of winning the lottery? So you can make life easier for other people. And he was always helping others. And I'm trying to think. Because there were three things that, you know, if I had a problem, and I can't remember now, the other with the finances, and there was a third thing I would come home and say. But they always had a positive answer to everything. And it disturbed me as a child, but I realized that I didn't know the future. And let's just sit and see. So I did spend a lot of time talking to God from my bedroom thinking, my mother's no help. God, you got to help me. But it kept me open-minded. And I think that was the important thing, that difficulties can be blessings and you keep on going, and that we're here to help other people.
Just that positive spin.
Yeah, how to forgive, yeah. And, you know, and I hear what other people grow up with too, and how negative they hear from their parents. And what it does to their whole life, because they're always hearing their parents say those things when something comes up in their life.
Mm-hmm. We are speaking with Dr. Siegel, and we're going to take a break right now. We'll be right back, and we'll continue this discussion.
Like what you hear? Tell your friends. Thanks for listening to HRNradio.com.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Mindful Beauty Show, and I'm Dr. Debbie Palmer, your host. I'm here with Dr. Bernie Siegel discussing his book, Three Men, Six Lives. So we were talking about taking a positive spin and how it's important how family influences children, the things that we tell our children as they're being raised. I really enjoyed the stories in your book, and you talk about your wife, and you talk about love. Do you believe that love transcends lifetimes?
Well, yes. You know, as I said, my wife and I coming together and our relationship, it was a tragic thing for me to see her in a past life. But mm-hmm. I know that in this life, we solved the problem of the past life. Let me explain that. Her father and the lord of my castle were in conflict over property between the two places. And so I was punishing her father by killing her. And the thing I realized when I was reading a story one day about a man, it's not a tragic story, but he said, he buys a farm and he said, I'm digging up to plant, and I hit a box and I open it and there's a treasure in it. So I called up the man who just sold me the farm, and I said, hey, here's this treasure for you. He said, it's not for me, it's yours. No, it's your farm. I just bought it from you. Well, but it's yours, so you have it. So the two guys are arguing over who should have it. And a third guy hears them and said, what are you fighting about? And they tell him. He said, look, you got a son, you got a daughter. Tell them to get married and give them that as a wedding gift. And I really felt whammo. My wife and I met and got married and solved the problem of two lives. This life, where there was lots of love and families, and the past life, because now there was nothing to fight over. We were all one family, and it was healed. And so I really believe that. You know, people could say, oh, you're nuts, it's coincidence, and but even my wife going out with me was something that I never expected to happen. That's why I felt there's another power doing this. As I said, we were working at a camp. We were both standing and watching our first grade boys and girls. And I just happened to say to my wife, as we were standing there, you know, it's really nice the camp has the pool open at night, so the counselors can come and take a swim if it's really a hot evening and so forth and so on. And she said to me, are you asking me for a date? And I wasn't, because she was so pretty. I thought she'd never go out with me. You know, I'm not her class of a person. But as soon as she said he asked me for a date, I said, oh, yes, yes. So she said, all right. And that night we had our first date. And no coincidence, by the time she was ready to go, the pool was almost closed. So I said, there's no point in going for a swim. So we went and sat and talked all night in some club. And that was the beginning of our life together. And everything seemed to work out from there on. You know, our joy with animals and all kinds of things. And I'd say it's no coincidence. And when I said, that we, you know, have had communication from the dead. I could tell you a whole bunch of stories, but because one of my patients was a mystic, just so you know why I got into this, and she said to me one day, I realize you're not a normal doctor, so I brought you a message from Frank. And Frank was a doctor friend of mine who had just died, and she told me this message, and I called Frank's wife, and she let out a shriek, and I said, I didn't do this to upset you. She said, no, that's what Frank used to say all the time when he left your support group meetings. So I wasn't a disbeliever, and my mystic friend's name is Monica. So I refer people to her if they want to talk to their loved ones who have died. And what tested it for me to make me believe were things happening in my family. And when my wife died on a Friday, Sunday morning, the phone rang. Monica, a lady who was an opera singer during her past life, is calling me to tell me that Bobby's fine, back with family, everything's okay. And my wife's mother was an opera singer. And there is no way Monica is ever going to know that. So when Monica calls and gives me the names and information about people, she doesn't know anything about. And I refer people from my support group. I say, you know, when they say, gee, my husband died, my wife died, I'm having such, I say, here's Monica's phone number, call her, see if you can get a message. And the other is, when my wife died, I got plenty of messages from my wife. And in many ways, when people say, what do you mean? Yes, there were things that went on in the bedroom when I would get in bed at night, sounds. She would kiss me goodnight by blowing on my face. I'd hear the sound like somebody blowing out a candle, and I'd feel a breeze on my face. There's nobody in the room. We were married on the 11th. I have so many dimes and pennies that I found. I saved them in my pocket now next to a picture of her I carry with me. Why? I mean, how does that happen? Imagine finding a dime and a penny under the sheets and blankets that you're fixing the bed, straightening it out in the morning, and they fly across the bed instead of coming towards you when you grab them and pulled out of your hands, and there's a dime and a penny lying there in the bed. And there is no way in the world you're ever going to explain how that got there. Or a dime and a penny I found also in a bird bath outside our house in the woods. And a voice said to me, go clean the bird bath. And I go, dump all the leaves and water out, and there's a dime and a penny. So I know that the consciousness goes on and that communication goes on after we die too. We don't have a body, but we have other ways of communicating. And as I say, when I experience these things, my mind is opened. I don't need to say, well, how could that happen? What's that? I mean, you must be, you know, thinking of something else, or it wasn't that. All I say is, it happened, and keep your mind open. Oh, and what convinces me, imagine coming back from the mailbox and saying, I just found a bunch of pennies. This is after my mother died. And I'm walking up the driveway and see them on the way up, not on the way down to the mailbox. And one of the grandchildren, I don't know, maybe he was 7 years old, pipes up, oh, they're pennies from heaven. Now, you tell me how a kid comes up with that one. And that's why when things like that happen, they become pennies from heaven because of what this little pipsqueak says. And you start finding them all over the house and when you go shopping and where you park your car, and it just makes me a believer. And that's why I write these books, because these things have happened. They're real. They're facts. So I believe. Even if I can't explain, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh, such interesting stories. We're going to take a break, and we're going to be returning with Dr. Bernie Siegel. See you after the break.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Mindful Beauty Show, and I'm Dr. Debbie Palmer, your host. I'm here with Dr. Bernie Siegel discussing his book, Three Men, Six Lives. So I really couldn't put the book down. I just love the characters in there. And I wanted you to tell us a little bit about the main characters, John, George, and Carmine. Like, which character do you think is most like you?
Well, I'd say that George, who is the doctor, surgeon, and so forth, the others, Carmine, and his last name is Bersamato, for the people. That's a real person. I haven't seen him in a lot of years, but I grew up in Brooklyn, and Carmine was my friend and neighbor. And I always say that I have a friend who's a mafia, Don, so if you ever need help, let me know. And, you know, people look at me like, what? But, yeah, I mean, Carmine was a guy with a good soul, and I can honestly tell you that one day I said to them, who's that a picture of in the living room? And I learned it was Jesus, and I began to learn about him. And I also had bacon at Carmine's house, which got my grandfather, who was an Orthodox Jew, very, you know, like, oh, my God, you know, I thought, oh, I'm not going to go to heaven now. But you see, again, our families loved each other. So my grandfather didn't go across the street and say to Carmine's mother, what are you feeding my son, you know, my grandson? And, you know, it was something to laugh about. And I've written stories about that, too. And who was the other one?
John.
Yeah, he's a psychiatrist. And that's how they all come together.
Right.
Because John has a past life experience and therefore accepts and believes it. So he's offering it to them, you know, as his patients and what they experience and how that makes them all believers to understand themselves. But I think John is a little bit of me, too, because of all the support group work I did with cancer patients. I mean, I didn't do past lives, but I would have people draw pictures, something I learned from Jung and Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. And you have past, present, and future in them. So you can say, draw a picture and see what went on in their past, what is ahead of them in the future. It's the consciousness that knows that. It's just amazing, amazing. Well, let me give you a simple example. Because when I went to Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's workshop, she said, Bernie, draw me a picture. I drew an outdoor scene for my meditation, all fiction. But in it is my inner guide, my angel, standing next to me on the path and other people and things. There's a fish out of water. And her first question to me was, Bernie, what are you covering up? And I knew that I had all this emotion and pain buried in me. The things I couldn't cure, couldn't fix. You know, why? See, about faith. Why did God make a disease? I did a lot of children surgery. Why does God give cancer to children? Why does he have the children born with all these defects that need surgery the first day of life? None of this makes sense to me. But I will add for people, I learned a perfect world, according to God, is not creation. It's a magic trick. That we're all here to live and learn. But I had a lot to learn. And so Elizabeth said to me, what are you covering up? I said, what kind of question is that? She said, you used a white crayon to make snow on a mountain. The page is white. You don't need a white crayon. And then she said, why is 11 important? I said, why do you ask that? You drew 11 trees in the picture. And that number 11 meant something to me, besides the fact that I got married on that day. I told her, oh, 11 months ago I had started doing the support group work for cancer patients. And so, and Jung said that a long time ago, numbers have quantity and meaning in them. So I learned in drawings to say to people, you know, why are there five of this? Why is that? And And the colors have meaning, too. You know, like red is an emotional color. Green is a healthy, natural color. So all these things said something to me. Because if you drew, as one woman did, the devil giving me poison as chemotherapy, and somebody draws it as a gift from God, guess who's going to have no side effects and who's going to have every one of them?
Mm-hmm.
And those are the things that helped inform me. And again, how powerful our mind is, our consciousness is. And part of why, when I say I write this as fiction, I find that often fiction writers write more truth than those who don't write fiction. Because what the fiction writers are writing is what they either have experienced or intuitively know. And therefore they write about it. But they're creating, you know, people and a life to give it words. And then there's the other people who would fight with me, say, did you do a study to show that? Or I can't trust that study, that's poorly controlled within a lousy journal. I even recited a poem once that talked about cancer. And the rhyming lines were, childless women get it, and men when they retire, it's as if there had to be an outlet for their foiled creative fire. And a doctor in the audience yelled, just because it rhymes doesn't make it true. But it is true, see. But if you recite it as a poem, or you say, here's a study, oh, that's not a well-controlled study, that came from a terrible journal, you can't trust that. So I learned to tell stories. And then people didn't fight with you. They just went out of the room saying, ah, that was just a story. That was a case history. That was an anecdote. But what I found was, if you hear enough stories, it opens your mind. And then the next thing you know, I'm walking down the hall in the hospital and somebody say, hey, I got a great story for you. And that's when they opened up and began to believe what I was talking about. I may add, even though it's not something that's in the book, but at the hospital, my patients began to be called Siegel's crazy patient. And that was a compliment. Because doctors couldn't describe or explain why they were doing so well. I mean, this is a quote from one of the radiation therapists. He called me, he said, I thought the machine was broken because I have this patient here who has no reaction to the radiation. But I realized the machine isn't broken because I saw your name in the chart. And I realized, oh, it's a crazy patient. So I said to her, how come you have no reaction to radiation? I get out of the way and I let it go to my tumor. Those are her exact words. So that changed a lot of the doctors at the hospital. Because when they saw something, they could say, well, that's just a case history, that's just an anecdote, but they knew it was real and true.
The power of the mind cannot be underestimated, that's
right.
For sure.
Yep, and it changes us and our lives, what we experience and what we retain within us.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I want to thank you for joining me today. I thoroughly enjoyed having you on the show. And
you're a good listener.
great stories, really great stories.
Thank you.
I also want to thank our listeners for tuning in today. If you want to learn more about Dr. Siegel, you can go to BernieSiegelMD.com. If you want to learn more about the Mindful Beauty Show, the award-winning book Mindful Beauty, or Repair Skincare, you can go to DrWPalmer.com. Be sure to join me January 25th at 12 p.m. Eastern Time for the next Mindful Beauty Show. I look forward to the next time that we're together. May your life's journey be happy, healthy, and mindful.
And do what makes you happy.
Thanks for listening to HRNRadio.com.